Hi, this is Rabbi Sam Intrader. You are listening to Dave's Gone By on UNCRadio.com. Enjoy, enjoy. Zeit Gazette.
Well, it is so wonderful for me to be here on the radio again with you on this Dave's Gone By radio program. I have interviewed actors and authors and singers and entertainers and people who don't do anything particularly special. Not sure why I bothered interviewing them, but I did. But here I get to talk to an actual fellow man of the cloth, another rabbi, and not just any rabbi. A rabbi who ran the famous Karlbach Shul for more than a decade. Not only that, after he was doing that, he's involved with an organization that is trying to make peace in the Middle East. Good luck with that. But they're doing it through comedy, through funny videos, and I'm intrigued by this because they actually made me laugh. And, you know, with the pain in my prostate, very few things do that. So I want to welcome to this program the wonderful Rabbi Samuel Intrader. Shalom, Rabbi. Welcome to the neighborhood.
Shalom, Rabbi. Rabbi, can I ask you for a bracha, for a blessing, that we should succeed in our mission to make peace?
You know, I would love to give you a blessing for that, but you're going to convince me first that you have an idea that people have not tried for the last 65 years. What makes you think that your policies, that your ideas are going to succeed when millions of people have failed again and again? What are you offering? And if you convince me, I might give you a blessing.
I think the name of our organization is Real Peace Middle East. And what we're trying to do is look at the peace process in as real a way as we can and not be limited by one or two agenda issues. In the past, one of the big issues brought up with regard to the peace process has been Israeli settlements and occupation. And that's an issue. But other issues have been totally ignored, such as the serious incitement that often comes out of Palestinian Authority TV that is very hateful many times towards Israelis and in many cases refuses to recognize even the existence of the State of Israel in textbooks that are taught to Palestinian children. Tel Aviv and Haifa are seen as port cities of a future Palestinian state. The government, the Palestinian Authority, has made it very clear that it is not willing to recognize Israel as a Jewish state. So it seems to me as if these issues also need to be on the table in serious discussion, and they have not been. When people in the peace movement have talked about peace, they've generally not talked about these issues. It was only Israeli occupation, and it was settlements, and those issues are all that you hear. And I think the reason why they have failed is because they're not putting everything on the table. The Palestinian government, Palestinian Authority, I should say, currently has a coalition government with a terrorist organization, Hamas. And all these kinds of issues impede the peace process.
Now, Rabbi Intrader, I'm going to interrupt you there because, you know, as a Jew, I talk a lot as well. But here's the deal. I agree 103% with it. Not just 100%, but I add an extra 3% because I agree with you so strongly on all these things. But what you're saying is not necessarily a solution or an addition to peace. All you're saying is the thing that pro-Jewish people like us, pro-Zionist people like us, have been saying forever. If anything, you're polarizing things more to the pro-Israeli side just by mentioning, oh, well, they don't recognize the state and they're with a terrorist. How is that helping?
I think the way it's helping is that the old approach hasn't worked, and we need to ask ourselves, why hasn't it worked? It hasn't worked because the Palestinians get more emboldened when these issues are ignored, when the President of the United States says Israeli settlement is the primary reason why the peace process can't come forward, then the President of the Palestinian Authority says, I have nothing more to do, it's all up to Israel right now. They get more emboldened. And as a result of that, of course, Israel feels more insecure. So the irony is, under the Obama administration peace process, the polarization is greater and the possibilities for peace are far less than they've ever been before. They have diminished the chances of there being peace that have increased them. In 4 years, have there been peace negotiations? Perhaps if the President of the United States were to put his hand down strong and say, yes, I support the creation of a Palestinian state, which I do too, by the way, and I have for 30 years. But on the other hand, I have to talk straight to you. These issues also need to be discussed as loudly as the occupation. If you really want a two-state solution, we have to discuss both issues. And I think there's been this fear in many in the peace movement to be candid and speak about this. The only people that bring these issues up are people that you might call to the far right in the Jewish community or in the Christian Zionist community, and many of them believe in greater Israel. And I think the uniqueness of our approach is that we support a two-state solution very strongly, but we also feel that if these issues are not given justice and are not dealt with in a fair and open way, and even just beginning a discussion of them, there will be no peace, because these issues impede the peace process. How can you make peace with somebody who refuses to recognize you? I mean, for all intents and purposes, when the Palestinians say they recognize Israel, they do not recognize Israel as a Jewish state. I may add a touch of humor. Someone once said their two-state solution is one for Abbas and one for Hamas.
That is funny. That is. Thank you for adding the humor there. That's leave me most of the other jokes, but that was cute. But it is true that if you actually look on the internet and look for maps of the Middle East that are put out by Arab countries or Arab organizations, Israel is literally not even visible on the maps. It just says Palestine, or it doesn't say anything at all. And they literally do not recognize that Israel exists. But let me add the but here, because I have a rather big but, as I see when I look in the mirror. The question is, Ronald Reagan, you should pardon the expression, George Bush, these were far-rightish people who were very pro-Israel, and who, when dealing with, you should also pardon the expression, Yasser Arafat, were saying you have to recognize Israel. That didn't work back then either, and they were really Christian Zionist, pro-right, etc., and so forth. I don't know why you think these issues have not been brought up and have not been dealt with in political circles with the far right.
I think my critique here is, and even of President Bush, I think for 8 years when he saw that the Palestinians don't want to move on that, he dropped it and just didn't pursue it any further. His intentions were good. He felt there's no chance. I think in light of the Arab Spring, for instance, we have seen that the Arab League is willing to play a responsible role at times and is willing to talk straight. And they did, in many cases, bring down dictators, and I'm not going to get into the politics of that, pro or con, but they disagreed with their fellow brothers, fellow cousins, who they always supported. And I think there is an opportunity here. I think it's the President of the United States, someone like Barack Obama especially, who is known to be a staunch advocate for peace. If he would talk Turkey, if he would talk straight, and he would say, there cannot be peace if you do not teach your children to recognize Israel as a Jewish state, if your maps do not recognize Israel. I think we need to start pressuring them. I think my critique maybe of Bush was that there was no pressure. It was, okay, you don't want to recognize Israel, I can't pursue the peace process. I say, let's begin pressuring, let's make that the imperative, let people in the peace movement start screaming and saying, we want peace, but we want a real peace, not a kind of superficial peace, but has no real result. And if I may turn to humor and tell you that we put out a series of webisodes, and in one of them, we have a 50-style kitchen that a young lady is trying to bake a cake, and she puts in different ingredients. The various ingredients she puts in include Hamas and Iran and all the wars that the Israelis and the Arabs have fought, and President Abbas, a leader who refuses to sit down and negotiate peace at this point, and President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu, who basically do not trust each other. And when you mix all these different ingredients that clash with each other together, you know what happens in the end?
What happens?
The cake and the kitchen explode. There's an explosion. And I think what we're saying is that this peace process is explosive because it is mixing elements that clash with each other. If we're talking peace, we need to talk peace. You can't raise your children on war and brainwash your children and talk war and then say you're for peace. And I think my critique is of the peace movement. Why are people in the peace movement who are progressive endorsing some of the most regressive policies that are currently emanating out of many Palestinian camps, that are currently allowing for a peace process that requires Israel to give land away to the Arabs, that no Jew is allowed to step foot in, let alone live there? That is racist. That is bigoted. That is Judenrein. And my challenge is to people in the peace movement to be truly progressive and to say these issues are unacceptable and the peace process is not working because we are not being candid about these issues.
Now, let me ask Rabbi Samuel Intrader, who is fired with passion. He's amusing. He's not that funny, but he's a little funny, but very impassioned and interesting to listen to about the whole situation in the Middle East. But here is it was where we may also part company a little bit, because we're both very, very gung-ho about a safe and sovereign state of Israel and all of that. But you are, as you said, for the past 30 years, very for a two-state solution. I am not so sure, A, that is workable, or B, necessary. Why does the Palestinian state have to be in Israel, or part of Israel? Why can't they live somewhere else in the Arab world?
You know, I am dealing with a status quo. While I support a two-state solution, I've heard very convincing arguments that question whether the Palestinians really are a people, but I don't want to go there. We're dealing with the political reality on the ground. The political reality is that there are Palestinian people who claim that they have rights to this land. They're not going away. There are clearly many Jewish people who claim and have strong history backing them up that they have rights to this land. They're not going away, God willing. So what we need to say is, the only way that we can bring peace to this process is if we teach the two sides to accept each other and coexist. I think what you're putting forward is probably not realistic based on the reality on the ground. A peace process right now is equally not realistic based on the reality on the ground. What we do need to do is begin broadening the discussion to include the kinds of issues I've spoken about, and then maybe we can create conditions that will force the two people to accept each other and learn to live side by side.
So,
it's not an easy process.
Do you make Jerusalem an international city? Is that your thing too?
I believe that Jerusalem clearly has strong historic connection to the Jewish people. For 2,000 years when we were in exile, we prayed to Jerusalem, we prayed for Jerusalem, with Jerusalem. I think that is something that clearly is a non-negotiable issue from our perspective. There are ways of still recognizing, as Israel has done very progressively and in a very open way, Arab and Palestinian rights within the city of Jerusalem. But I think Jerusalem, clearly, the Jewish community, the Jewish people, have strong rights to that go back thousands of years. And that is a deeply emotional issue that I think we can't just put on the table and say, okay, we'll internationalize that too. But to be truthful, if that were the only impediment to peace, and if we were to see that the Arabs are really ready to live side by side in brotherhood together with Israelis, and they cut their incitement, stop the terror, and the only impediment were the status of Jerusalem, I think there would be a way to work that out too. But we're a far cry from that right now. Jerusalem is Israel's capital. It has always been, and God willing, always will be.
I mean, you know, there are so many things I agree with you with, but I wonder if you are too much of an idealist in a lot of ways, too. I mean, a lot of the things you're saying, oh, we have to demand this and demand this, and this will be sensible, and the Arabs will listen, and we'll force them to listen, and then we'll coexist, and Jerusalem will work. I mean, I really wonder if you do have, as wonderfully as you're talking, if you really do have any kind of solution that hasn't been put forward or just squashed by, as you say, the realities on the ground.
I would like to suggest that I'm a pragmatic idealist. I do believe in peace, and the handwriting on the wall right now does not suggest it in any serious way. But the pragmatic reality is that if either side has total domination, there will not be peace. So the pragmatic reality is that we need to create conditions, and that is something new Rabbi, that has not been talked about. If people in the peace movement would talk the way I'm talking, and the Palestinians would hear that the progressive community that wants peace and that has been screaming peace so strongly for all these years is calling them to task and is saying, you have got to respond to these issues. We are not going to ignore them. I think there would be a change. I think they're getting away with it because many in the progressive community are deaf to this discussion and they don't want to hear about it. They just want to blame Israel. It's convenient. It's a reflex reaction of superficial nature. It's all Israel's fault. And I think that is why the Palestinians get more emboldened. And I think their own leaders aren't being honest with them. And I think many in the progressive community around the world are not being true to their values and honest as well. Real peace, Middle East, requires a very open discussion. There's nothing novel to what I'm saying. You know, a great rabbi, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lozzatto, said in an introduction to his book, Mesulat Yesharim, he said something so beautiful. He said, what I am saying is nothing new, but just as it's not new, people have a tendency to forget it. The purpose of my book is to remind people that in order to have a true peace process, we need to discuss these issues. And that is my critique. And I feel that President Obama has really not paid any serious attention to these other issues. And that's why he has failed. And that's why he has done the exact same thing that George Bush did, has had no movement on the peace process. America has strong financial hold, obviously. It funds the Palestinian Authority in a big way. I think if we begin a serious, earnest discussion and try to force a peace process, something President Bush did not do, I think there are possibilities to begin changing the atmosphere. And yes, it's idealism, but it's pragmatism. I'm telling you what needs to happen. We need to change the discussion.
Okay. Okay. I need to change the discussion as well here to go on a different track. I think you certainly have made a very strong point, but I want to find out a little more about you, Rabbi Samuel Intrader. I want to know how you became a rabbi.
How I became a rabbi?
Yes.
I was born a rabbi. No, in a word, I've always been inspired by rabbis as a child. When I say I was born a rabbi, from my earliest memories, rabbis were very inspirational in my life. And I was blessed to have been in the presence of some. I grew up in a little town in Baltimore, and there was a Rabbi Taub there who was very inspirational, Rabbi Sternhell. At any rate, these rabbis had a strong influence on my life. As I got older, I moved to New York, and I met other great rabbis. The Rabbi of Bubbav had a great inspirational effect on me. And then I met my master, my teacher, Rabbi Shlomo Carlbach, and he kind of bridged a lot of worlds for me. He sort of took me back to my roots, to my childhood, with his deep spirituality, but also put it forward in a very progressive, idealistic way, if you will. And that resonated very strongly with me, and that sort of helped me progress to a form of rabbinate that is very joyous, very optimistic, very positive.
Is it mystical in any way? People say he was almost a sort of a mystic kind of person. Or is that...
Yes.
What does that mean? What did that? How was he different from the other rabbis who imparted their learning to you?
I think his mysticism, as you say, his modernity, his tradition, he took me back to the world of my grandparents, but also allowed me to peek at the world of my grandchildren. And I think being a very modern man, he would march in the peace demonstrations in the 60s, but he would also go into Hasidic courts and interact with people that are to the far right and the far left, and it's bridging those worlds that inspired me. Most of my teachers, masters that I met before, either fit into one of those two worlds, many of them, most of them more to the right, and he kind of bridged those two worlds for me. He took that ancient, older tradition and made it very contemporary, very futuristic, and infused it with lots of zeal and excitement. And that talked to me in a very different way.
Now, how old was he and were you when you first came into his temple? Was he already getting towards being really old or what?
He was, I would say, in his late 40s, and I was a teenager in my late teens and early 20s, perhaps. And, it was just the right time. He had developed his process very powerfully by that point. And I was seeking, living in two worlds. I was I was in college, and Michael Harrington was my professor at Queens College, and the other author of The Other America, very progressive, a great soul who had a great effect on me. And then I would go for Shabbat to Bubba Beis Hasidic Court in Brooklyn and be touched by the charisma and mysticism of the Bubba Beis Rebbe. And both of those worlds were like stirring in my soul, and Rabbi Shlomo Carlbach helped synthesize those two worlds for me.
Well, speaking of being touched, the elephant in the room is the allegations that have come out against Rabbi Carlbach since his death, which is not really fair to someone who's dead. But have you any idea, did you know anything about what was also going on with him?
I tell you, you know, as he quoted the elephant in the room, and it's posthumously, obviously, these stories did not surface in any way when he was alive. And I think what that does is it obviously complicates the situation very severely. It is very difficult to posthumously go back in history and account for. Shlomo Carlbach was a very loving man.
Well,
he embraced every human being, every child, literally embraced. He probably hugged more people in the world than any human being alive. And he traveled the world, and that meant men and women, and that meant children and old people. And from that warmth, one could assume messages are misunderstood, especially when there's a male-female chemistry that gets sometimes intermixed. I knew him to be a very loving, compassionate, caring person, deeply spiritual. And I think in that context, he has impacted the world brilliantly. The
right.
Allegations that you speak of obviously are there. And, they're on the record. They can't be denied. They're the reality on the ground right now. But the Shlomo Carlbach I knew didn't resemble that in any way. He was a very loving, compassionate person. And as his personal assistant for many years, an assistant rabbi for several years as well,
you saw only the. I mean, everybody has a shadow side, the side they don't want the world, the rest of the. Even the people who seem the most perfect may have a dark side, but you have no personal knowledge or experience or any of that. For you, the Carlbach you knew was only the good Carlbach, right?
That's right. I mean, look, he clearly was not. I wouldn't put him on a level of an idol, obviously, and everybody has shortcomings, and clearly he. He's very human to me. The greatness of Rabbi Shlomo Carlbach is not that he's an angel or some mythical figure, but that he was human and had shortcomings and had failures.
Well, what were the shortcomings?
He was still able to rise to that very high level and was still able to impact people so beautifully.
Well, I'm wondering, what human frailties did you see in him? Because when you listen to the records, he is perfection. I met him once on the street, you know, I just saw him on the street, and I said, oh my God, it's Shlomo Carlbach, and he seemed really, really saintly. He seemed like he was in another kind of a holy world, literally. So I don't see, what shortcomings did you see from him?
Yeah, I mean, look, like every human being have different issues. I mean, clearly, timeliness was not a strong point of his, and he would many times keep people waiting for hours, and that got people angry, and usually that was because he was tending to somebody else. And wasn't able to come timely, and he was known to be tardy and late for everything. If I may make a shot at humor, somebody said he did everything late, but leaving this world, that he did way too early. He clearly, you know, was a person who was trying to be a father to a lot of people and trying to be loving to a lot of people, and maybe, you know, he went overboard sometimes in doing that. And that created complications in relationships and other things. I mean, there are clearly, every person has issues. But to me, what we need to remember is that whatever challenges people have with him, we need to remember that the good that he did was so powerful and is having obviously an eternal impact. There are right now thousands of people, tens of thousands, from all Jewish walks of life, far right to the far left, hundreds of thousands, I'll say. Every denomination is into his music, getting more and more into his teachings, into his stories, into his message of love. So I would say that is the Shlomo Carlbach we need to remember. And clearly the allegations that are being put forward are serious, and people that are out there in the world need to be careful in that context when they interact, and we need to obviously hear those women and their pain and what they're claiming, but we need to remember that this man literally spent 24/7 tending and caring to. He slept a few hours a day, I would say, literally. He was on the phone with people visiting him, concertizing, studying. I mean, he didn't have time for that kind of stuff. He was one person who was literally infused and infatuated with his mission day and night. And that's what he engaged in, and that's what I saw him practice.
Did you by any chance see the musical that was in Florida and then they brought it to New York for a couple?
Yes, I definitely saw it. And I think it makes a brilliant attempt at trying to get his message through. And I think it succeeds in that people get a sense that here was a man who tried to teach love to the world and tried to root it in his tradition and tried to reach out. And I think that, again, it's not obviously a literal biography of his life story, so there are a lot of things in there that are factually inaccurate. But that notwithstanding, they never intended for it to be factually accurate. That notwithstanding, the deeper mission of the man comes through beautifully.
That, by the way, the name of that show is called Soul Doctor. They were trying to bring it to Broadway. They brought it off Broadway for 2 or 3 weeks in the summer, and so I'm not sure where the show is going at the moment, but I just wanted to get that out there. They're doing it in other places. It's called Soul Doctor. Now, you replaced, in a matter of speaking, the Soul Doctor in the shul. He appointed you his next of, not next of kin, but you know what I'm saying, his replacement. What was that like going into the shul that this charismatic man ran for so many years?
Let me say I tried, for starters, and I will say that he clearly left a very powerful legacy and got, the moment he passed away, it was like he was very well known and very popular when he was alive, but the myth and who the man really was just grew by leaps and bounds literally within days of his passing, and that created a very powerful energy where people were coming and yearning for the excitement. So together with hundreds and in many cases thousands of people, we started singing and dancing to his songs and praying in his manner and teaching in his manner. Clearly no one can fill those shoes, but I was there as a vehicle to try to keep that approach going and broadening it by allowing more and more people, obviously, to participate in it, because it was the hottest thing. Literally within weeks and months of his passing, these Kalbach Minyanim from the bottom one up just rose around the country and around the world. Unlike other movements that have very strong structures, this didn't have that. It was a genuine grassroots movement, and I started visiting communities around the country and in Israel and in England, around the world as well, and connecting with people and just helping it, continue in the tradition with which he infused his synagogue in so beautifully. And it was very challenging, obviously, because no one can replace someone like him. But it was an honor, and it was very inspiring at the same time. And it was comforting to be with people and to connect with people who were trying to continue something beautiful and grow it in every way.
Well, what happened? You were there for about 10 years running the Kalbach Shul, and then something went wrong. What happened? Why didn't that continue?
And it was time for me to move on. It was the synagogue at that point was growing beautifully, and I had some. I just got married, and
Mazel.
I was blessed with a family. Needed to sort of deal with family issues, and at that point, as the shul was growing and evolving, there were many people that were getting excited about it. And at a certain point, I just realized that let me take a back seat and do my own thing. And other people stepped in, and the show is continuing beautifully right now. And here in Florida, I'm in the middle of creating something like that as well. And I travel around the country and do these kinds of programs. And it was a beautiful experience in the years that I was at the Kalbach Shul. And at a certain point, you sort of need to move on in life. And God bless me that I'm moving into different worlds, as you see right now as well.
Is it the dream again?
Yeah, it's the dream again.
The one about your mother?
No, it's just as weird. I'm standing in front of my temple, completely naked, wearing nothing but my yarmulke.
That is odd.
I know. I never wear my yarmulke. And all my friends are yelling at me.
For being naked or for wearing a yarmulke?
Neither. They're yelling at me because I'm talking about how much I love Israel. I'm worried that I'm in love with Israel.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that. So when did this start happening?
When I was a kid, I went on a teen tour to Israel. And I came home with all these amazing feelings. But I think that was because I made out with Sherry Needleman on the bus ride to Masada.
It's a fantasy. You outgrow these things.
I know, I know. And I did. I went to college. I learned that Israel was a horrible apartheid place, and, you know, I was fine.
Then what?
Then there was the earthquake in Haiti.
I think it's a bit far-fetched to believe that Israel caused the earthquake.
No. Israel leads the world in humanitarian relief.
Yeah, but that's just to distract the world from the occupation of Gaza.
That's what I thought at first, but Israel's not in Gaza anymore.
Well, that's right, but there's a blockade, and blockades are illegal.
None of the people you're blockading are trying to kill you.
Did you ever think that maybe your friends are right? Maybe the settlements are the problem.
But the settlements only take up 2% of the West Bank.
That's just statistics. 90% of the people who use statistics are wrong.
Doesn't make sense.
Don't
you see?
Doesn't.
None of it. We're liberals. We believe in things like gay rights and equality and voting for all citizens.
Exactly.
And Israel does all that. But we spend our time boycotting and petitioning. Why?
Wait a minute. What is... Is there something you're not telling me? Jason, what did you do? What did you do, Jason?
I booked a trip to Israel.
And?
And I'm taking my mother.
I'm gonna have to cancel my next appointment. Lie down. Lie back down, Jason.
But you are trying to build a shul of your own, as it were, or a congregation in Florida while doing the Real Peace Middle East organizational stuff. Am I correct?
Yeah, and let me just add, if I may, that in the term in the terms of Shlomo Carlbach in the peace process, just in Israel, if I
sure.
May.
Tie it all together with a beautiful red bow. Go ahead.
I'll tell you. We'll try. I was driving with him once on the BQE. I hope there's no police officer listening. Maybe I was going 80 miles an hour. I don't remember. At any rate, as we're talking, and I said to him, Shlomo, this is probably in the 80s, and I said, what would be so wrong if the Palestinians have their own state, and if over the course of 5 years, which is what the peace process meant back then, Israel gives a little bit of land, and they put their weaponry down, and if after 5 years, the evolutionary period takes us to giving them a state that they'll have their own state and we'll live in peace. I'll never forget this. He put his finger on the button to the passenger side of the door and he said to me, Sammy, I don't know if I'm allowed to be in the same car with you. You just don't get it. And, you know, to be truthful, I was very naive and I guess I still am very idealistic, as you say. And this is the same Shlomo Carlbach who, if he would go to Israeli prison, would not start singing until Arab prisoners would join the circle. Once there was one of the Munich terrorists in a prison cell where he was about to begin singing. He refused to begin singing until that terrorist joined the circle. I believe the story is I wasn't there. They sat there for about 2 hours. Eventually, the terrorist saw that this man was for real. And she joined the circle, and as Shlomo told the story, he was teaching Rav Nachman of Breslov. She was translated into Arabic to the Arab prisoners, and they were singing and dancing together, and it was one of those idealistic, beautiful, holy moments. So I want to point out, this is the same Shlomo Carlbach who was idealistic, but was pragmatic. And I think that is what I'm trying to sort of synthesize here, too, and saying we have to look at this in a pragmatic way, not lose our idealism, continue dreaming about peace, not giving up on that, and yet speaking in a very practical way and saying, we tried giving land away, and it didn't work. Whatever Israel gave land away, they were met with terror, they were met with suicide bombers. It hasn't worked. other side needs to change its behavior in order for Israel to be able to give them the land that they want in order to form the kind of state they need to. And we need to start saying that.
Well, Rabbi Samuel and Traeger, you have said it quite succinctly and beautifully. And I, as I said, I agree. I'll push it even to 104% for your sake. I was agreeing 103% before, but I'm adding a percentage. 104% with Rabbi Samuel and Traeger. And by the way, if you go to the website rpme.org, Real Peace Middle East, .org, then you can see what he's talking about and see these very amusing, they are funny videos that they're putting together to get their points across. They're also on YouTube, of course, which is where you can see them. So, Rabbi and Traeger, I just want to thank you so much for being so open and honest and truthful and out there with what you're saying, both on this program and in the world at large. And I wish you best of luck and mazel and glick with your shul that you're developing in Florida, and your organization, and your family, and everything else that you're doing.
Rabbi Zeitzitz, may I ask you now, as I did initially a half an hour ago, can you now give us a bracha to succeed in this project?
Oh my goodness, let me try. I'm not that good at being put on the spot, but let me see. It's Baruch Atah Hayu. And I hope you really succeed. It would be nice to have some peace, 'cause that is what we all need. Thank you, Rabbi and Traeger. You couldn't be greater. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you so much. And God bless you, and keep doing what you're doing.
Lovely chatting with you, Rabbi. God bless you all.